It's time for honest reflection in youth ministry. The present culture is more established than ever. It's so crushing for many a youth pastor. There's a lot to be learned about youth ministry, and even more to be shared. Here's to hoping that this helps, whether you are 19 and have just started, or have been serving in ministry for 19 years. We hope that this weekly dose of honesty and humor will help to heal and renew hope for you and yours. Welcome to After 9, the most honest hour in youth ministry.
Hello and welcome to After 9. My name is Chad Higgins.
And I'm Zach Workin.
Zach, how are you, my friend?
You know what, Chad? I'm doing okay today. I'm a little tired, though, if I can be honest. I'm a little tired. Baby tolls and whatnot. He has decided in the last couple weeks that 3 a.m. is a great chance to wake up and just let the world know that he's wet and okay. That he needed to be changed.
Wouldn't you, though?
I would. If I woke up in my own filth at 3 a.m., I'd probably cry out for someone to come change me, too.
Do you want to tell our listeners a little bit about your child?
Oh, that's we haven't really talked about that officially. Yeah. So I have a child. His name is Isaiah, and he is adorable, and he's all over Facebook thanks to his grandmas who come and help take care of him. So he's always in the other room. So After 9 listeners, you have to know that we always have an audience of one. So not only are you always hearing this, but he's actually the first audience because he hears it rough cut, right? Like he hears it unedited. And so he's usually hanging out either in the room with us or in the right next room playing with his toys. And he's a sweet little boy that has been a blessing to his mommy and me. And so we love him. And so his grandmas come up and they rotate coming up on Sunday nights and hanging out through Thursdays. And then Friday is my day off from the office to rest and renew and record the 3 R's of every Friday and also my time with him. And so we get up in the morning, hang out, play, eat, and then Uncle Chad comes by and we record and we all hang out together.
I like to refer to him as Baby Workin.
Baby Workin is good. And that's actually his preferred hashtag on Instagram. Whenever he's photographed on Instagram, he asks that you would hashtag it Baby Workin.
Yeah. You know, it seems like we talk about social media stuff a little bit. And if you're not following us on Twitter or liking us on Facebook, we ask you to please do that.
Great avenues of connecting with us and other youth ministers that are talking honestly about youth ministry.
Yeah. I was thinking the other day, though, like for your child, right?
Yes.
And Facebook and even maybe Twitter probably will not be around when your child is a teenager.
It will be some other form.
But
implanted.
But like there is this like perpetual like family album. Right?
Yes.
That will always be online.
We'll never discover family photos, right?
Right.
Like that's the thing that I think we've lost is like you're never going to be the kid that like goes over to the grandma house and like he's never going to go over to his grandma's house and be like, oh my gosh, can you believe that there were photos I hadn't seen? Like
right.
It's just always available, right? Like it's just always convenient. It's just always available, always accessible.
I can't imagine that, right? Being like 16 years old, getting some sort of like social media account for the first time,
yeah.
And like you log on and immediately there's like 10,000 pictures of you, on
yeah.
there, right? That are like tagged that you and like 1 year old naked in the bathtub, and you're just like
great.
I'm trying to get a girlfriend over here.
I'm already crushed. Like there's no way. Yeah. Like that's such an odd conversation about like students using social media and then being on social media. If we can have that moment of like, so parents, a lot of parents, it seems like, are very comfortable in photographing their families and putting pictures of their kids on Facebook. I know there's like privacy parameters and restrictions
right.
and whatnot, but many of the same parents are very hesitant to let their own children use the services, right? So it's like that weird like, hey, my face is on the milk carton, but I can't drink the milk. And so it's like that weird, like you're documented, but you're not a user. And that's a really, I think, interesting dynamic for young people.
Right. All right. So
and
Zach,
the future of young people as they become future parents.
It just seems overwhelming to me. I even as an adult to get on there and to be a part of it from day one. Right. Because in my life, I've been able to like, I don't know, like monitor it. Right.
Yeah.
Like, I've put up the pictures that I've wanted, said the things that I want. Like, there's an entire, like, set of people now,
yeah.
right, that are getting on social media. And at some point, right, they're going to be able to, like, look back at all their parents' posts
yeah.
to when they were, like, the birth announcement of them, right?
Yep,
and mom and dad's going, well, this was an accident, right?
Right, you're right. Like, the involuntary documentation of your life. That we're all unwilling documentary participants. Yeah, yeah. Or if you're my dad, you take all the photos and there's no editing. Like, that's the part for me that, like, I mean, contra to many of the middle school girls or guys that we work with that, like, very selective and restrictive about the pictures they're going to post. Yeah. Like, you know, like, they'll take a picture and then, like, text it back and forth and, like, is this good? Should I do this? And they're like, yeah, you look great. Awesome. You get folks from, like, my dad's generation that are like, took 40 photos, posted 40 photos. And it's just like, and it's like three are almost the same. Like, there's like three of us eating around the table from slightly different angles. And it's great. It's great. Because it's free. If for as free as the digital ink is of 2016, it's also still very permanent.
Right. My favorite that it seems like I see a lot of, especially the older generation, 4th of July, right?
Oh, my gosh.
4th of July, my, like, Facebook feed will blow up of people trying to take pictures of fireworks. And it's just this dark picture that has, like, blurry lights.
It's got, like, one little, like flick or flecker of,
right.
To After Nine listeners at home, if you have aunts or uncles that are consummate firework photographers, have them click before they see. You have to anticipate the firework photograph, yeah.
I wish there
firework selfie.
I wish there was, like... some sort of social media aspect that, like, the public could weigh in. Like, yeah. You could lose your picture rights.
Oh, wow.
You know what I mean? Like, if enough people voted that was like, this dude is just putting up garbage all the time.
Just like a global social media survivor. Like, just like, we all live on this giant island and some of you are going to have to go.
Right.
That seems like disastrous and wonderful reality TV. Like, how do we port that reality TV show concept to the global Facebook market?
I'm just telling you, if there are a few people that...
There's, like, one user left. Like, what if it's, like, we get everybody signed up on, like, the new social media outlet, the Survivor Book or whatever, and have them all, like, sign up, and then it's, like, just elimination. It's like Lord of the Flies eliminating each other until until there's just one user left. Hunger Games. Yes, social media Hunger Games. Ladies and gentlemen, you heard it here first from Chad Higgins and Zach Workin. We are starting social media Hunger Games.
Listen, I volunteer as tribute.
Oh, please, if you want to pit yourself against Chad Higgins in the social media contest that is March 2016, I guess here we go.
I would lose because I wouldn't want to post anything.
Which,
it's just exhausting. Like, the whole thing is exhausting to me sometimes, which I leads us into a little bit what we're going to talk about. You know, what we do as student pastors, sometimes we hit these seasons that we're exhausted, we're tired. And so...
Doing too much.
And we talk about that, and me and Zach will probably be the first ones to admit to you that we're probably bent a little bit more towards that way.
We like doing good work. When the work is good, I like doing it, yeah.
We will throw a few things on our plates, and but there comes a time
sometimes we'll buy more plates. Yeah. They were on clearance or whatever, yeah. But, you mean I can have 4 gatherings a week for the price of 3? Done.
I'll do that.
Buy 3, get the 4th free. Oh, no. That's exhausting. Sorry, I cut you off.
No, but...
I've overloaded you. I'm exhausting this joke.
Every time I try.
I know. Every time you try to rest, someone interrupts.
Yeah, so what we want to talk about today is finding a place of rest.
Yes.
And finding an atmosphere, a place, a time in our schedule... that we can set aside as student ministers to truly rest. And one of the things we'll talk through in this episode is how do we rest? When do we rest? Why do we rest? All those kind of questions. And so, yeah.
You could say there's a right and wrong way to rest.
Yeah, I think so.
I think that's worth talking about, yeah. So where do we start that conversation, Chad? I mean, what's the jumping off point? I mean, I think maybe we could build a little bit of the case for we don't rest enough. And I think that's probably an easy case to build. But where's the first point of Chad Higgins' wisdom that you would offer to our After Nine listeners and friends for where the rest? Is it a why question? Like, is this people don't know why? Or is this the question of how? Like, so what's the first tidbit?
Let me pose a question to you first and foremost.
See what he did there? He took it back the other way.
My friend JC ask a lot of questions. Here's my first question to you. How do we know as student ministers when we truly need rest? Mm. What are the indicators in our life that say, okay, we need some rest?
The first indicator, Chad, is if someone asks you that question and you don't have a quick answer. If someone says, when was the last time you took some rest, and you don't remember when because it's all a haze or blur because you are bleary-eyed, maybe it's time for some rest. I think that the first is, that sounds silly, but if you can't remember the last time you had a day off, if you can't remember the last time that you had like a true Sabbath or whatever, and Sabbath maybe is, you know, an afternoon or a morning because you have other job commitments or children to take care of or whatever, and we'll talk about how some of those things aren't always competing with rest. They actually can contribute to good kind of rest. But I think if you can't recall, like, that's a place to start. And if you can't recall, then that means you probably don't have a pattern. And if you don't have a pattern, you should try to find a pattern. I think the wisest thing that I would offer to any youth pastor who's like, let's talk about one thing, like, what's your one-shot wisdom for me today? And that is finding good routines or rhythms in ministry. Too much else is beyond your control. Too much else is dynamic and wild and late-night phone calls or, you know, trying to get the cart off the track. Whatever you can do to fight for a kind of routine or rhythm, not the mundane, not like settling in for mediocre and just kind of riding something out, but to live into a kind of routine that is working hard, resting hard, and like whatever the task is at hand, like the time is carved out in a way for intention or purpose. And I think having a intentional or a purposeful routine or rhythm is like the best wisdom that I could give to a youth pastor. Right. And that starts with rest. Like, it doesn't end with rest. It starts with rest. Yeah. Because you want to do this for a long time, I hope. Yeah. Like, and to do that for a long time requires rest. Yeah.
Okay. So so for you, one of those indicators would be not even remember, right? Those blurry type things happen in our life where we're really asking the question, when was the last time I rest?
Yeah.
For me, one of those indicators, my brain, I start getting very scatterbrained on everything.
Do you feel less sharp?
I do, very, very much. I will find myself forgetting things more often. I'll drop the ball on multiple things because I've got so many different things on my plate. And not that that's always a bad thing, but it's I'm not doing any of those well. And I'll find that to be true. And so I can't keep my train of thought going very, very well and all of those kind of things that'll be very, very true in my life. My car is a great indicator.
Okay. That sounds super practical. I like it when you bring it to the practical. What about your car?
When my car gets extremely messy,
okay,
I need a break.
Okay.
Because one, I think it's an indicator. I end up almost like living out of my car, you know, like I'm going from like point A to point B.
Like, it's not just like coffee cups, but it's like coffee cups and food wrappers stacked in coffee cups. There's like notes pages. There's like changes of clothes.
Right.
When you get shower accessories in, is that when you're, right, you're living too much out of your vehicle? And you're just like, well, I just ran into the C store and I got a coffee and I did a quick, you know, little bath there in the sink because I'm staying busy.
Yeah, if you're digging through old Sonic bags to find a peppermint.
Like, I haven't brushed my teeth in a while, but maybe this bag with the little, like, you know, bonus Starlight mint will take me home.
Yeah. Right. Yeah, so normally, yeah, that's what you'll find. There'll be like this small cocoon that is a driver's seat, you know what I mean? And then there's gonna be...
if you have no space for anyone else in your car, that's probably a great indicator that you have not made space for rest. Yeah. If rest was a person, could they fit in the passenger seat of your car?
Yeah, so that's always an indicator for
me. Okay, that's good.
My car will go absolutely just nuts. Okay. And so then it's like, oh yeah, let's go to lunch. And then I'm trying...
You're like, you're going to have to drive.
Yeah, hold on while I clean this out.
As you shovel stuff away, yeah. You can use your getting stick, right?
Yeah.
So real quick, did we talk about the getting stick the last time we were doing that? So Chad Higgins is a truck owner, and for those of us that are not truck owners here in the South or Southwest, apparently not equipped standard with every truck, but as important as any other part that would be equipped standard with any truck is having a getting stick.
Well, maybe that's just me. I don't know if every truck
I feel like when you said it like you were part of a club, and it was like, this is what we do. Like, as a truck owner, we all have getting sticks. The best part.
I'll sell something. If I have something, I just assume everyone else does.
No, the question I have for you, though, this is the thing that I think after our encounter of you helping me out a month ago or whatever, was that it was a hockey stick, which the thing for me is, like, Oklahoma is not necessarily, like, indigenous for hockey, and I have never known you to play hockey, ice, street, or otherwise.
I did.
Oh, did you?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Well, that changes the story. I thought that you just went out randomly to Walmart or whatever and bought a hockey stick because you're like, these are the kind of getting sticks that you need.
Well, okay. So here's what it is. How we've gone off on this tangent.
This is important.
It's not important.
It's about your vehicle.
So I like to keep what I have classified as a getting stick.
A getting stick. Trademark. It can't be, because is it universal?
I don't know. I just came up
it
with
is
it.
Now.
The getting stick.
The getting stick.
The people up north that are hearing this are going, why am I listening to this?
Yeah, but they have hockey sticks, so they're interested.
Okay.
Maybe there's a new function or purpose for their hockey sticks up north they didn't know about.
All right, so us rednecks, here's the thing.
This is for our friends in Michigan, too.
Well, the bed of your truck is very long.
True.
Right? And my truck sits up a little higher, so I can't just, like, if something is in the middle of my bed that's small, I can't just reach it. So I keep a hockey stick in the bed of my truck, and if I have something small in the back of my truck that I need to get, I can grab the hockey stick. I can grab it and pull it to myself. It's the getting stick.
I guess the question for the non-truck owner is, why would you make things you need to reach so hard to reach?
Well, if you put it at the back of your bed,
it rolls. I got
and then it,
it
rolls.
I got
like,
it,
no, it
okay.
gets back there.
Okay. Well, SUV owners or wagon owners, crossover owners. Maybe this is not true for everybody, but for at least for my running crew, we all have small tubs that all have like the little things that we need because we don't have the cool cargo boxes or the toolboxes of a truck. So we have a small little utility kit. Which is not as cool as a getting stick.
That's cute.
I know.
With your little SUV. We have a little crossover. That's just precious. Your little tote, you keep your groceries in there.
It's got our reusable grocery sacks and jumper cables and all the kinds of important things.
That's cool. I used to have a little four-door car.
Oh.
The breaking point for me that I finally went to a truck is I loaded my entire trunk and back seat up with half a rick of firewood. And it's at that point that I said, you know what? I probably need a truck.
Is that not Civic ready? Yeah. I feel like if you know what a half a rick of firewood is, you're already halfway to owning a truck. Okay, so Rez. Sorry, ladies and gentlemen, if you fast forwarded through that tangent, we hope that you really enjoyed it. And if great. So exhaustion, truck. Maybe even meandering in conversation. Is that maybe a sign of exhaustion? Is if you're starting to talk about other
maybe
things?
Maybe I'm not as mentally sharp today.
Maybe it's not as sharp. Not as prepared. Not as prepared as we could be. But I think you're right in saying that there are physical things connected to our emotional and mental state, right?
Right.
Like for me, if my hair is getting longer than I want it to be, like that's kind of like, hey man, maybe you should get a haircut because you're looking a little wonky. But my desk at the office, right? I think that's one of those, like when it's just like when I have to like scooch stuff to the left or right so I can like put my laptop down or whatever, it's like, well, maybe I should have finished those invoices on time or whatever. And I think though there are some physical assets or artifacts that reflect the busyness of our state of being.
Sure.
And so I think the important thing is not to, I mean, it is fun to humorize them, but not to glamorize them and to take stock of maybe you should take a day of rest and get reset. And I think that's the case for why rest is so important, is that rest is a chance to reset.
Sure.
And I feel like some of us, it's like go, 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 and there's never a pause to reset, because sometimes we do hit the tangent wall, right? Like we start running and man, we run so fast and so far and work so hard, but there was never a moment of like, were we even on the right path? Like what were we doing? Like what narrative were we chasing? And I think sometimes we can make a tangent into a ministry, and when we look back, we're like, that wasn't even the main thing.
Right.
Like, I know that we shared about before we started recording today that we're having some kind of heart-to-heart conversations with some of our student leaders, because maybe for them, they've lost the narrative or the importance of what we're about, or maybe in our pursuit of doing things really well that we missed the main thing because we were trying to make the thing a thing.
Absolutely. And I think one of the big problems is we live in a society that almost glamorizes being tired,
yeah,
right? That you almost find your worth,
yeah,
in the fact when somebody asks you, like, hey, how's it going? You're like, oh, exhausted. I'm doing all these different things.
If it wasn't for coffee, I wouldn't be here.
Right. You know, and our culture almost, it promotes that. It promotes this, like, you're to work so hard and so fast and constantly, right, that you find yourself in a place of exhaustion.
Yeah.
And I think we as ministers, if we buy into that same type of thing, then we justify it for our people.
Yeah.
Because in the same way that we can get so caught up in the ministry that we can miss the fact that we also are people who are growing and developing and trying to follow the Lord.
Yeah.
And I think we can almost create space in our own life that doesn't allow for our own discipleship.
Well, and I think that's the kind of be an example, be an exemplar minister as you are a faithful disciple kind of thinking and language that we need to put on it. Because I think for some folks, they edify the busyness because it shows how good they are and how hard they've worked.
Right.
But I think a gift you could give to your ministry, to your leaders, to your congregation is to be like, I'm actually about a practice of rest.
Right.
And for me to take rest is important. Good rest is as important as good work. And actually, I will give better work with better rest.
Sure.
Like this is, I mean, there are moments where it's like, well, I have to stay up and finish this project, or, you know, this is my big weekend event, so I may not sleep as much as I would on a regular weekend. Like, there are moments and seasons of like, well, I had to do this thing for a short time, and then now I'm going to bounce back with more rest. But on the whole, there should be a pattern of rest that matches the pattern of the kind of quality of work that you want to give to your life of ministry. And that's I think, and this is where we can take it back to in the first half, the patterning of God and the creation story, that is, as much as it is about Creator God, I think it's also about the discipline of God, and to see that God works and that God rests, right? Like, God is about a thing, a great thing, a good thing, creative kind of thing. The kind of thing that we would encourage folks to take heart and to be about creating and doing and making good. But there's also that bit that really lingers, like, that's so counterintuitive, maybe countercultural for sure, mm-hmm, at least for the circles that we're in, that you would take time to rest. At the either end or the beginning of however you want to structure that time, that the time that you're serving is marked by a start and finish because of a period of rest. Like, if work is continual, then you don't even know when you got done because you were always doing. And so to have this notion, this gift of rest, be rooted in the most beginning parts of the narrative that we claim as the most important narrative is critical for us to example what it means to be faithful.
Yeah, no, I completely agree. And when I was first starting out in ministry, I think that a little bit what you touched on was probably one of the hardest things for me to wrap my mind around. Because naturally, my personality, I'm a checkbox guy.
Yeah.
Right? Like, I love lists. I will do things and then write a checkbox just to check the box.
Okay. Which is a super satisfying practice if you don't at home. For all the digital task lists that you can do, there is something deeply satisfying to scratch something off a list.
So, but in ministry, the completion, I struggled. When I first started in ministry, finding a place to where I'm able to, like, check the box off,
right?
Like,
yeah.
Well, this is complete. You know what I mean? Like, because you look at ministry and it's like, okay, so we have finished camp.
Yeah.
Now we begin to work on camp for next year.
Or what a great midweek. before next midweek.
You're right. Yeah. And so there was constantly this thing that I struggled with, because I was constantly trying to find myself in this place of completion, of like, because any other, most of the jobs that are in the rest of the world, there's tasks, right? Yeah. Like you do this task.
Finish the project.
You finish the project and then it's done, and you get to see this completed work. And in ministry, it's like, it's people. And so it's like, and we're making, disciples of Christ. Right. And so it's like, at what point is that done, right? And so we're constantly in this place, at least for me internally, of the struggle of completion.
Yeah.
And so rest felt difficult for me because I have that mindset of, well, there's more to be done.
Yeah.
And in ministry, there's always more to be done. Like, literally, you can always find something else, right?
Yeah.
Or diving into a deeper relationship with somebody, or a new relationship with someone else, or creating a new program, a new strategy, or whatever that is.
You can create more boxes to check. Yeah.
Yeah, dude, that box.
Sub boxes. Yeah, sub boxes on boxes.
And so for a while, and I'll be very honest with you, Zach, even after 12 years of ministry now, I still struggle with that, because when I find myself resting, my natural feeling is not, oh, this is nice. It's honestly a feeling of guilt. Mm-hmm. And I know that that's wrong, but I feel like I should be doing something right now. Or, you know what I mean? Like, oh, I could be doing this, this, and this, get ahead on this, start this, all those kind of things. And so I can begin to feel guilty. And I don't think that that's healthy or right.
Well, and I think, and this we'll pick up in the second half for some stuff that you talked about, finding a place or a space of rest. And mm-hmm. I think that the guilt comes from thinking that rest is a zero integer next to work as a non-zero integer, right? Mm-hmm. Like, rest means nothing and work means something. And that's not true. Like rest is not the null next to all the things you've done. Like, there is goodness in creation in rest that are not associated with toil or work. And I think when we pick it up in the second half, I really want to talk about the place and the space of rest, and that, like, maybe there's something happening that rest for our After Nine listeners and friends is actually about a passion or a life-giving, a life-sustaining kind of hobby or creative project or thing that's not connected to the toil or the work of the vocation. And so I think that's one of the things that, I mean, drives literally you from Bartlesville to Tulsa on Fridays on our day of rest, because here in this space together, there's a place of rest. Even though we are doing, we aren't working. And I think that's a way to kind of name some of those things in the Christian life that are really significant. Because I think, and this is one of the things that we started with, there are wrong ways to rest. I think there are wrong ways to rest where we just fall into a kind of collapse of rest, where it was just like there was so much exertion that I just shut down. So there wasn't a reset or a log off. It was shut down.
Right.
And that's really hard to come back from. Like, it's hard to reboot from if you work really hard for, X number of days or X number of weeks, and then you just shut down for X number of days or X number of weeks. It's hard to bounce back from that, as opposed to having the built-in pattern. But there's also that wrong rest where it's just, well, I didn't do anything today, so I feel guilty and anxious and shameful. And that's wrong too. But I think part of that comes from not having kind of the guided, discerning voice of what it looks like of how to really rest.
Very good. All right, so we heard a little bit about that. As we come back from the break, we'll dive into what that looks like in a practical sense, how do we do it, when do we do it, and talk more about this rhythmical pattern that we can get into.
Hey, After Nine listeners. We are so incredibly thankful for all of your support and encouragement in these first 10 episodes. And now, Zach and Chad have a request. It has come to our attention that there are After Nine listeners in almost 100 unique locations worldwide. This is so exciting, and we want to involve you in building up this amazing community of honest youth ministers. We want to challenge you to find one new After Nine listener, another youth minister, and invite them to an honest conversation. Ask them big questions. Spend some time conversing over coffee and chalupas. Snap a pic with them and send it to us, or tag it with hashtag After9 on social media. Thanks for listening and building up this community.
Been with on this episode. And I think that's true. I think there needs to be maybe this isn't the third place coffee shop gym mentality, but I think there is some argument to both a kind of particular time and a particular place, like a physical space for rest. You probably shouldn't take your day of rest in the office. You probably shouldn't take your day of rest in the busiest part of wherever. If it's, you know, your favorite little coffee shop, if it's a quiet corner of your house or apartment, if it's a place you have to go, a little park to go walk around in, or a garden or wherever, I think there is an appropriateness to where we rest. And then I think inside of that appropriateness of place is also the appropriateness of time. Like if it's a, if it's an afternoon, if it's a particular evening, if it's this particular day of the week, whatever it is, I think those are some really great guidelines. The things that I want to talk to you about, Chad, because you, you spoke about this earlier that I think was right and true, is the wrong kind of rest, like kind of the anxious, the guilt-ridden rest or whatever. And I think the folks need to hear a little bit more maybe about that, because I feel like some folks would say, well, I took my morning off, or I took my afternoon, and I just I slept, I crashed. It was, you know, Netflix binged, right. You know, played some Xbox, some PS4, and is that rest? Is that always rest? Is that good rest? Is that bad rest?
I'm not going to completely discount it, right? Because okay. I think sometimes, like, there is every once in a while where a great little Netflix episode is really refreshing.
And you got to catch up on that show. You know what I mean? Everybody's watching it, and you've got 4 hours in a row, so let's just do it.
Right,
let's
because, I mean, is Steve Avery guilty or not, right?
Oh, stop. Okay, yeah.
But, you know, all those kind of things. Or maybe, you know, I need to get caught up on a little FIFA 16. You know what I mean?
I know.
And all of those kind of
play
things.
This weekend, yeah.
But the question is, if we continue to return to those same things over and over again, right, we find that the only time that we're resting is in front of our TV or doing whatever that may be, right. That just really just takes our mind off of something, yeah, for a moment, right?
And distraction.
I don't know that that's truly fully rest. I think every once in a while it's fine, but I think when we continue to come back to it over and over and over again, that we can eventually find ourselves in a place that we've really never truly rested.
We dupe ourselves. We're like, oh, no, I rested. I totally beat Skyrim twice, you know, whatever. Like, I mean, okay, maybe, but like, I don't know if binge watching all the Lord of the Rings extended cuts because you haven't done it in 6 months is necessarily the same kind
Absolutely.
Of thing.
Absolutely. You know, I every time I think about rest, I continue to come back to this passage of scripture in Mark chapter 6. It's after Jesus had sent out the disciples in Mark 6, starting in 30. It says, the apostles returned to Jesus and told him all that they had done and taught. And he said to them, come away by yourself to a desolate place and rest a while. Mm. For many were coming and going, and they had no leisure even to eat. And they went away in a boat to a desolate place by themselves. And many saw them going and recognized them. And they ran there on foot from all the towns and got ahead of them. And when he, speaking of Jesus, went ashore, he saw a great crowd, and he had compassion on them because they were like sheep without a shepherd. Mm. And every time I think about rest, like I come back to that place of being reminded that when we work and we're diligent in what we do, we come to this place in an opportunity to confess and present before the Lord, like, God, here is what's been going on, right? I lay all of these at your feet. And then Christ invites us kind of in this illustration into this boat with him.
Yeah.
That they kind of go off to this desolate place and this time of rest with Christ. And I love how this kind of little section ends, because we see that at the end of this rest, there is this kind of renewed heart,
yeah,
for the people.
Yeah.
And I think when we rest correctly, that's where our heart should be when we come back from that rest.
Well, because that's so true and so right. Because I think that compassion is a resource. And I think that sometimes we run out of it. Yeah. And I think it's so critical that when it talks about Christ coming back to the crowds, that he had heart, that he was moved, that his heart was kind of shaken for them or had compassion on them. And I think that for us fallible human folks to acknowledge that sometimes we run out of compassion, that we run out of the ministerial fuel right. that we need. And it's not about whether or not we're good enough to do the work. It's not about whether or not we're called to do the work. It just stems from that we've run out of the gas to do right. the thing. We needed the rest. We needed to be led away. Right. We needed to be led away to – and desolate is such a fascinating word there, that it's not like led away to another busy area, right? It wasn't right. like Jesus is like, we're done here. Next city. Let's move it. You know, it's like to a desolate place, a place without other people. And it's in that kind of retreat.
Sure.
Right. The away from the fray, away from the action, to retreat, come away, is, you know, that's a Christ call. Right. Right? That's one of those, we are so good at hearing Christ call to go and do, but we miss that come away with right. me, to borrow from Jesus, who Nora Jones must have borrowed from as well. Come away. Yeah, sorry. But it's a call. It's a call on our lives of disciples, right? Like this is the people that know Jesus the best, that serve closest to Jesus in both proximity and in spirit, and he still tells them in the midst of doing the thing, come away.
Right. Well, and I think it goes back to, and we talk about feeling that guilt, and you talked about a little bit before we left on the break, is sometimes we see rest as the zero sum, right, and not a part of the whole. And I think we've got to understand as ministers, our importance of rest and our importance of filling ourselves up is just as important. And I would go to argue maybe more important than almost anything we do in ministry. Mm. Because if we ourselves are not healthy, our ministry can never imagine or yeah. never even think of being healthy.
Right.
Because we're moving and we're leading from a place that's empty.
Right.
And I think far too often ministers, we have substituted our own relationship with the Lord, our own time with the Lord, for study time for our sermons, or writing new curriculum or whatever that may look like. And so we find ourselves in God's word oftentimes, but I think we find ourselves in God's word in preparation to give to someone else and not necessarily to our own heart. And I think when we're not diligent in doing that, And listen to me, after nine listeners, I'm speaking to myself first and foremost in this, of a reminder that I have to be diligent in meeting with the Lord, listening to him first and foremost for my own life before I can ever expect to be leading anyone else.
Well, there's almost that like vicarious relationship, right? Like it's almost like we've taken the commitment of our own self to being Christ's disciple and like laid it out on the table of ministry. And we've staked out the claim that so goes the ministry, so goes my relationship with Christ. Right. Like we've like martyred ourselves to the ministry. And so if the ministry is going well, we feel like we're doing okay. Right. Or if the ministry is going bad, then we're bad. And we've got to take the inverse, which might actually be the proper ordering of things,
sure.
and say, and you said it, the ministry can't be any healthier than we are sustainably. The ministry cannot be any healthier than we are. And if you haven't set yourself up to be a well-practiced, disciplined disciple, then how are you expecting your ministry to know what that looks like if they can't see it in you?
Absolutely.
And this is not a matter of like you get it perfect so they can be perfect, but there's a modeling here. Like right. part of pastoring, part of shepherding is modeling and exampling what it looks like, because most folks only understand this in the context of the relationship they have with you. Because you understand it in the context of the relationship that you have with Christ. I mean, this is the fellowship, right? Like this is the disciple's ethic. The way we learn is by the way we are led. This is not like you can put it all in the book, pass them the book, and they can figure it out, right? Like this is life on life, because it's modeled life after life after life. And after nine listeners and friends, for you, if that's all you need today, you need to pause and go take your time of rest now, do it. But we want to share just a couple more maybe practical or pragmatic thoughts on rest, some of the lessons that we've we've learned or are still learning about rest, because I think there are some well-reasoned points and practical tips for rest, one of which is this. So if you're not having rest, have rest. If you're having the wrong kind of rest, you know, vacant, distracted time to fill up more distracted time, move to a time of real rest. My suggestion, this is from Zach for whoever wants to take it, one day a week, don't check your email. If it's an email, it probably could wait. If someone really needs to get a hold of you, people have your cell phone and they could call you. People have your phone number, they can get a hold of you. It's okay, maybe even to hide the app from the phone or to not open the clamshell of the laptop to go check and write more emails for stuff. I think that's the kind of thing that we feel like we have to always be available. And always being available is not always being actual.
There's no boundaries in that, right? Yeah. We create a space that's not healthy for us, our spouse, or even the students. And we continue to come back to this, even talking about rest. But like our students are going to model what we do in their life, and so as they become adults, what we do in our ministry of never resting, they're going to do in their practical job as well, right? And they're going to take work home with them. Yep. You know, they're going to stay late in the office, all of those kind of things. And their family and everything else, those priorities are going to be pushed on the back burner.
Yeah.
You know, I think far too often we as ministers probably get frustrated with our people because of the priorities that they have in their life.
Yeah.
Like, you picked the soccer game again.
Again, over church gathering.
Yeah, yeah. Exactly. And we get frustrated because of that. But in all reality, maybe we're teaching that.
It stings because it's true. It stings because it's true, because we're just fighting and jockeying for more priority, right? Like we just want them to do more things with us. And that's what we end up doing, is offering more and more things for them to do with us, so they feel more and more guilt about the things that they're at or not at. If you don't have, and we said about this a few minutes ago, find the right place to rest. And that might be napping on your favorite couch or your chair or whatever. But I think there has got to be, in the same way that we have a set-aside place to work and do on other things, that there needs to be a place for you that is your rest place.
Sure.
That if you go to this place and drink your favorite cup of coffee, that you don't take work there ever. Like, if I'm ever at blank coffee shop, I'm never working. I'm always there, like, reading for enjoyment or writing for me or whatever kind of thing.
Yeah.
If it's your unused office room in your house that's become a storage closet, carve out a nook and get a reading chair and have a time there to read, write, and think. If it's walking or whatever, like find that path that you walk that path
right.
again and again. As like, this is my routine walking path for my afternoon or my morning respite.
Absolutely. You know, one of the things that you mentioned and talked about the Sabbath earlier in this episode, and I can continue to come back to this idea. And I remember hearing a man teach on the Sabbath once, and he talked about the structure of the Sabbath for really the Old Testament Jewish people. And he talked about the structure of their week being built around the Sabbath.
Yeah.
You know, and I think oftentimes we think of the Sabbath as the Sunday type thing, yeah. right?
The Lord's Day.
And even though our calendar says that Sunday begins our week, for most of us, our mindset is Monday begins our week,
yeah.
right? And Sunday's the end of yeah. everyone's weekend, and so the end of the week. And we tag it on. And for most ministers, Sunday is not a day of rest for many of us, right? For most of our listeners, probably on a Thursday. I know many guys that take Thursday off,
sure.
or they'll have Friday or Saturday, or one of those may look like a day off for you. But this idea that the Sabbath is central, that the 3 days leading up to the Sabbath is a preparation for the Sabbath, this time of truly encountering, being with the Lord, listening to the Lord, having an encounter with God in a very significant way. And then the 3 days after the Sabbath being this time of reflection of what happened on the Sabbath.
Yeah.
And I think when we start to look at our week in such a way that the time of rest, I love the practical things that you're talking about, like reading and re-energizing in those different ways. And I think that there's a very just natural part of us that need those, right? We need that creative outlet. We need those.
The intake. We need to have stuff instead of give stuff.
The time that's fun, that we enjoy. But I also think that we've got to spend some time where we're connecting with God at a deeper level on our time that we're off. Because I know that myself often, but many ministers that I know, that when it's that day off, it's like, we're going to find everything else that we can do, right? Instead of going, okay, this is going to be some me and God time, you know, that we re-energize. One of the great lessons that I learned in ministry from a close friend of mine that I worked with, he would start every day in the office and beyond what would happen at home, but he would spend the first really about 30 minutes of every day once he sat down into his office chair, before he opened his laptop, before he started answering emails, text messages, all those kind of things, planning 30 minutes right at his desk was just time with him and the Lord. And that's a habit that I've tried in my own life to really adopt, because I've found in doing that, I kind of almost consecrate the place, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
That every single morning at my desk, beyond my own home time, like, here's the reason that I'm here.
Yeah.
Here's the reason that I've showed up to work today.
Yeah.
And it's going to be central around this idea and not my own practices, you know what I mean, my own schedule. And so that's a built-in secure time. And so for a lot of our listeners, they probably have kids, right? They're trying to get to school, get around, all those kind of things. And so the morning is super hectic for you. Yeah. I don't know a lot of youth pastors that are getting to bed early and getting up early. And so that habit may not be as great for ourselves. And so let's set ourselves up to succeed. Maybe for you, that first thing that you do when you get in the office is you go, all right, this is going to be some sacred time for me. I'm going to begin my day by resting, being with the Lord, and then I'm going to work from that place.
That place, yeah.
And I think that that's healthy. I know that when I'm in that practice, when I'm in that rhythm, I'm much more effective.
Yeah.
I'm much more diligent in the things that I'm doing. And I'm far less lazy, to be very honest.
There's a certain kind of focus that comes with that, right? Because that's the back and forth of, what do I do next? What am I about? I mean, I know that for a lot of folks, the waking day is, what am I going to get done today?
Right.
You know, what am I going to be about today? And if you already know your first task, if you already have your first task every day in the office or the meeting space or wherever you're working from, you know, the morning has begun, you had your breakfast, your power shake, you got your kids to school, whatever. But if the first task, the first checkbox every morning is to open the Word, to pray, to meditate, reflect, to be focused, and then begin, it changes everything.
Sure.
Changes everything. And that's a pattern, and that's a rhythm, and that's a routine. It's the baseline to creating this movement, this music of meaningful, creative, good work.
Right. Because I think as oftentimes as we're harping on students, right, every week of, you know, read your Bible and all those kind of things.
Ooh.
You know what I
Preach,
mean?
Go. Like,
we also have to find ourselves in that same habit.
Yeah.
And not that we're talking to youth ministers believing that we're not in God's Word. I believe that we are, but if we're not going to be in ministry very long.
But if we're being honest, sure, it's probably not as good as it could be.
Right. Because I think, okay, I'm going to step on my toes a lot here. I think the same thing that we're wanting our students to do is sometimes the same habits that we're carrying our own, you know, in our own life. And so, if we really think that we're going to be able to, like, lead a church with the same time of the Lord that we're expecting from a 14-year-old kid, right, that it's, like, 15 minutes a day, you know, we're going to read our chapter, like, I want to push back in my own life and go, I'm probably going to need to spend more time with the Lord than I'm expecting from a 14-year-old kid.
Yeah. Well, and then that gives you the ability to make the ask of them, right? Like if you are fully committed to this, not just as a job or a workplace thing, like you're not just reading the Bible to prepare a lesson for the work-related task or whatever, but if you are in it, about it, present to it, in the midst of the other stuff that you have going on, then that gives you the wherewithal, the integrity to say, are you? You know, because I think that we are really good at being like, well, I read my Bible a whole bunch this week because I had to teach four times. Mm-hmm. And it's like, well, that and they studied their books for their tests. I mean, it's part of the job thing. Sure. But if you make it the presence thing, if you make it the practice thing, the rhythm thing, the routine thing, then that gives you the pastoral integrity to ask of your students, your church members, hey, like this we're all about this. Right. This is not just pastor specific function. This is about all of our needs and faithfulness. Absolutely. And rhythms.
And for each of us, right, that may look different. This isn't this like legalistic talk that we're trying to do, right? This is much more of the heart of the matter of pausing each day and then specifically each week in our life to really give surrendered hearts to God that says, God, we pray that you move in a mighty, mighty way.
Yeah.
And so that first comes from us. But maybe for some of our listeners out here, maybe you're finding, you know, adequate time, you know, studying and taking in God's word. But maybe for you, a pause or rest looks like being quiet for a moment. Mm. Listening, praying, meditating, like you're talking about, or even engaging in conversations with other ministers that we can be encouraged. You talked earlier, man, and part of this whole podcast for me and you, Zach, is us the opportunity for every week for us, we get to get together on Friday, do life together, and we get to talk, and that's extremely beneficial for me.
There's an action to it. There's an activity to it, but it's life giving, and I think that is at the core of what meaningful rest is. Is this is life renewing, life sustaining, life giving, and it may not just be the nothing. It may be the something that you do inside of your restful time. It may be every morning at 9:05, whenever you're at the office before you start the day. It may be every Friday afternoon. It may be, but there is an action to rest. There is an activity of rest. There is a way in which we move inside of a restful spirit that gives us the right kind of centering and focus to be about the work, because the work will always be the work. But for our own livelihoods, our own faithfulness, our own discipleship, we've got to be the people of the rest.
Absolutely. Well, After Nine listeners, we thank you so much for being with us today. We hope that you find rest this week. And even more than finding it, we hope that you create a space and a time for it. It's not just going to happen. There's going to be things that continue to pop up on your schedule. And so if you're not diligent about making it happen, you will become burned out very, very quickly. And so on behalf of Zach and I, we're praying for you. We want to encourage you today and know that the things that you're about and the things that God has put before you are far too important for us to putter out. So love you guys. Thanks for hanging out with us. My name is Chad.
And I'm Zach. Thanks for listening to After Nine.
Thanks for listening to After Nine. Join the community and continue the conversation on Facebook, Twitter, or visit afternineministry.com to share your story.